Based on what I've been hearing up until this moment, expect some guest appearances today by Not Sure, the Nine Mile Farm Rooster. He has been going ape shit outside my window. So the days of Billy Ray's Crows may be back for the show, at least for today. Anyway, today is a big deal. It is Monday, the 12th, which means that the Laws of Life book dropped. More on that in a minute. I also have some updates about honestly, what has been the thing that I've just mentioned once or twice that has had the most amount of feedback ever for something just mentioned as an aside, the artificial intelligence course that we're going to be doing on, basically it's designed for solopreneurs and small business people or people that want to become one to formulate a complete process for your business over 40 days. That course is now 95% complete, and it is ready for pre-registration. And I'll tell you more about that in a minute. Because what are we going to talk about today that fits in with both of those things is the concept of taking your freedom, taking back your freedom, or the title says it perfectly, I think, freedom is forged, not granted. I was really going to call it something like freedom is seized or freedom is taken or something like that. Except when I really thought about it and did some collaboration with GPT, by the way, I realized that the kind of freedom we're talking about today, it's not just taken, it's not just seized. It's also cobbled together. It has to be forged. It's not one thing. It's not like you just go, I'm free now because I did A. And I'm going to give you an extensive list of things you can do today to take back your freedom. In fact, there are 11 of them, and then various components within them. And it is by assemblage of these things that we actually take freedom away from the people who, I don't know if they don't want us to have it, but they have designed a system that is intentionally designed to eliminate freedom and autonomy as much as possible. It's just a managed system. Bureaucrats, politicians, et cetera, corporate oligarchs, what they want is control. And what they want from control more than anything else, you think it's just because they're all up there evil like Mr. Burns with their fingers like this, ha, 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 Smithers, bring out the sunblocker or whatever. And I do think some of them do rise to that level of like Bond villain. I mean, God, the WEF people, the George Soros' kid that's taking over now, right? They look like Bond villains. They do. I get it. I understand. But mostly I think what this really is a design for control. And the control is designed for predictability. If we have a society that functions this way, no matter how it is, if it's predictable, then we can manage for it. And that's what these people want. That's not what we want. We want management of our life, design of our life. And that means we have to forge our own lifestyle. And the reason I lead off with that today is because you're going to realize when I give you this list of 12 areas that you're not going to do them all. Actually, it's 11 areas. You're not going to do them all. And neither am I. And no one is. This is your creation. You are the artist here. You are the designer here. You are the architect here. And not every architect uses every building material. Not every architect designs multi-story buildings. Some specialize in one-story buildings. Some specialize in renewable-type buildings, self-sustaining buildings. Some specialize in commercial buildings. Some specialize in residential. Some people specialize in as an architect, they want to do, you know, a set of designs that actually build out a subdivision where others want to only work with people that are custom. All these architects look at all the things that they have available to them, materials, climate types, et cetera, and contractors who can build the house, like what materials go together by which process, plumbing, electricity, insulation, all of it. There's millions of variables. And they take their knowledge and then they design a building based on the client's desire and their own particular bent. Well, in this case, you're the architect and the client. And it's up to you to take these things that we're going to talk about today and forge your own freedom. Because this is one thing we do know. You cannot vote your way to more freedom. You can vote for less oppression. Okay, we can possibly remove some blockades and some things. We can possibly open up some more pathways. But you know what? Even if you do, you know what the majority of people will do with that? Nothing. They're like cattle in a field that act like they want to get out, but if you open up a gate in the fence, they won't leave. Or they leave and they kind of meander around and go, yeah, all the stuff's back in here, and they come back in. They're not, you know, I've always said this before, like, be the pig, not the cow. The cow, even when it gets away, it comes back. The cows always come back unless they get lost because they're stupid. There's an analogy there, too, if you want to take it, right? But in general, when cattle, you know, get out of the fence, they start trying to figure out how to get back in pretty quick, especially if they get fed every night or every morning or something like that. The pig, he's constantly that's why we have so many feral pigs. Like, pig gets out, he's like, woohoo, I'm gone. Not all of them, but most of them. So that's the analogy to think about here. How would you get out? Even if we do reduce the barriers, even if we do eliminate some of the bullshit, some of the nonsense, some of the regulations that hold us back, it's not what's holding most people back. Tell me what you want to do. Tell me what you really want to do. You know, no matter what it is, and then tell me you can't find 10 people doing it. Right? So you want to do X, here's 10 people doing X, and your excuse is they won't let me. Well, how'd those 10 people do it? They did it with a combination of what we're going to talk about today. Yes, money is part of this. Yes, if you want to start up a business and it has a $500,000 startup cost and you have $5, you have a problem. But a problem is simply a question that has not yet derived its solution. That's all that it is. You must derive the solution. You must work for it. Nobody's just going to walk up to you and go, hey, everybody voted for Trump, so here's $500,000 to start your business. If there's an environmental regulation, maybe you have to move around it. Maybe you have to design around it. I don't know. That's up to you. You have to build your own thing. With that, before we get into it today, I do want to give you just a couple announcements. Number one, the book is here. The book is here, and I am extremely excited about it. We have already sold more copies of that book than the pre-registered list could have accounted for. So there had to be people out there like, I don't need to be on Jack's announcement list. When the book's live, I'll go get it. Like, I put it out on social media today, and I'm waiting for the orders, and slow reporting from Amazon, and then all of a sudden, we have sold hundreds of copies of the book, Laws of Life, on day one. If you want to get your copy, get over to the Survival Podcast. There's links there for the soft cover or the Kindle format. Now, here's what I spent most of my morning doing is answering emails that are, I'm trying to order more than one copy, and Amazon said there's only one available. I don't know what's going on. There's as many available as you want to order. Kindle Direct Publishing for print is print on demand, meaning when you order it, they print it, and they send it. That's how it works. There is no limit to how many you can buy. You can buy as many as you want. For some reason, Amazon system limits how many you can put in your cart when you first start your order to one. I don't know why. I have checked. There is no way for me to change that. However, there's a workaround if you want to do it, and that is you put it in your cart, and then before you check out, you can change the quantity in your cart. It'll let you do it. It just won't let you change the quantity when you add it to your cart. Why? I don't know. Ask the Amazon gods. However, it ships free, okay? It ships free. It would be better to do individual orders. They help with the rankings on Amazon as individual orders. If you order five copies in one order, it counts as one sale. If you order five copies in five orders, it counts as five sales. That's why I've asked especially the ambassadors to have the book sent directly to the recipient if possible. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. Any orders are appreciated. Kindle orders, I don't know why you'd order more than one Kindle, but they're available now too as well. So thank you to everybody who has picked up a copy. Please consider picking up a copy and sharing it with others. On that, I'm about to show you something that most of you probably would have never saw unless we decided to do something we've added on until you got the book and looked on the back or got to the end of the Kindle version. There is a new website. It's been live for a while. It's called jackslaws.com. That's the web address, jackslaws.com. If you're watching the video, you can see it on your screen right now. And this is where you can go get a workbook that goes along with the book. You fill out a form, give us your emails, and you'll get a follow-up system that kind of kicks you in the ass for about 12 emails. It's already preloaded. You're ready to go, so you'll get them. It kind of just moves you along. Doesn't try to sell you anything else, just moves you along. And give you some other resources as well by filling out the form there. If you want to do it without having a copy of the book, you can. It won't work as good, though, because it's designed to work with the book. But there's something else on this site that a lot of you have been asking about. The AI course will be sold through this website even though we'll post about it on TSPC and all. But if you want to become dangerous with ChatGPT, we are working on right now, as I said, it's 95% done, a 40-day mastery course designed specifically for solopreneurs and small business people who act like solopreneurs. There's people that, you know, they're not solo because they have two or three employees. But when it comes down to it, their employees are doing mundane tasks. They're doing all the business operations. They're doing the marketing, the sales, the contracts, the write-ups, the SOPs, all of that stuff. Or they're not because they don't know how. This course is going to teach you how to do that about 15 to 30 minutes a day. Some of the days are going to push you if you take this course, I promise you. When we first floated the idea, I'm like $20 because it was going to be really super basic. When I put together the instructor guide and saw all the prompts I'd be giving, I'm like, this is bullshit. This is not going to help people actually get a business to 10X or get a business from zero to one, either or. We need this to be tighter. I have actually been through this 8 times revising the way this works. And now I've got it where I'm excited to do it with you. And this is the basics of how this course is going to work. When you sign up, you'll start getting emails for 10 days. Those emails will be all the things you need to do to prepare yourself for the course. When we book the final seat, we're limiting it to 100 people for the first round. We'll start a countdown at that point, 10 days to the next Monday. That way, everybody that signed up gets all their preparatory stuff by email, like how to set up a Telegram account, how to set up, you know, how to get a paid ChatGPT account, which I'm really, really, you could do it with the free one. I really recommend it. We're going to charge $100 for this course, not 20. But when I tell you how it's going to work, I think you'll understand why. If you have wanted to have me as a mentor, this is the closest you're ever going to get. I don't have time to do individual mentorship or consulting. I hated consulting when I was a consultant because I would put all the work that you're going to learn how to do into consulting for a business, and then they paid me a lot of money, and I went away, and they didn't do it. Figure if you do the work, right, then maybe you'll do it. So every morning, you're going to get a short email, 2 to 3 minutes from me, kind of prepping you for the day. You're going to get a drop of a Word document. You're going to cut and paste out of that Word document from my instructor guide into your student guide. It is going to tell you exactly what to do that day. In the Telegram group, you guys can share your results, share your questions, etc. Toward the end of the day, I'll look at it, and the things that are concerning, the things that you're stuck on, whatever, I will do another quick, short, down and dirty video that will be posted to the group. The next day, we will repeat that and so on all the way through. You'll have your weekends off. This is Monday to Friday for 40 days, so it's roughly a little over 2 months in total time. And by the end of it, this is what you'll have: the ability to build lead magnets, the ability to actually drive traffic, the ability to get yourself exposure, like on podcasts, exactly how to do that. An SOP for at least a couple things in your business, but the process necessary to develop all the documentation for your business. So if you have to scale, you can hand an employee an SOP and more. And wait, there's more. There are unadvertised bonuses. And unadvertised means I'm not going to tell you. But when you see what, I mean, there's one unadvertised bonus I'll drop at the end. It's probably worth $50 by itself. So if you want to be in that course, and I'm telling you, yes, we said 20 and now it's 100. There's a reason. And it's so powerful that, and you guys don't hear me talk like this much about stuff that I put out, right? It is so powerful that the target price probably needs to be 200 to 300. I'm doing it 100 for round one. If you don't get into round one, I don't know what the price will be on the second round, but it will be higher. So I would go get on that list now. And again, you're not signing up. You're just getting on the announcement list. When we're ready to start taking payments, we'll drop an email saying that. Now, that's way more lead in than I wanted to do today. And Tom, I see, already answered this, but John says, is there a different link for ambassadors? Do we just buy it from one link? Yeah, there's one link for everybody. I mean, honestly, you can go to Amazon right now and just look up Laws of Life and you'll find the book. Because so many people bought it, I think we come up now first for that search, even though there's a lot of Laws of books out there, because it's kind of hot today already. But if you go by the survivalpodcast.com, you let me pull off the back end and get some of the money they keep from the authors back as an affiliate. So I'm double dipping, and I appreciate it if you would do that. Amy B says, would this be useful for a self-publishing author? You bet your ass, whether you're talking about KDP or whether you're talking about the course. Absolutely, it would be. I'll tell you somebody else, and we got to get into the topic today, and I'll talk more about the GPT course coming up. First of all, if you're a business person, as long as your business is already existing and already generating any revenue, this is 100% tax deductible because it's education and marketing for your business. Number two, if you're a small business person and you have a small team and one of your people on that team is your marketing person, I guarantee you, you're not getting everything you should be getting out of that person. Buy this course for them. But I would buy this course for them in a heartbeat. In fact, I will tell you that as good as Tom is and the stuff we're working on together, when you see it, you're going to get blown away. I'm excited to run through this course with me as the marketing guy and Tom as the technical guy, because by the end of it, I'll be more technical and Tom will be more marketing. So this is going to be really, really fun. As I was building this, I started building this differently. I started thinking about the fact that Tom will be going along with us in this, and I'm like, if I want to really make my partner, Tom, stronger in our business together, I need to build this course so it will benefit him as he's helping to market my businesses. So this is what I would build for my own partner or employee, and I'm offering it to you at a price that's stupid as far as I'm concerned. All right, let's get into this take it back concept. I want to start off with, just as an introduction, the myth that you can vote your way to freedom. And by the way, I used to believe in this myth, and I still have a hard time saying you can't do it at all, because I can give you some examples where we have removed some tyranny from the state with voting. Cannabis freedom would be an example. You know, we have so many places now where you used to go to jail for a couple freaking bits of bud or something like that, and you can now go to a retail store and buy it. Now, whether you're pro or anti-cannabis, I don't really care, but to me, it's always been reprehensible, the idea that a human being could be locked up or fined for possession of a plant. So, did we get more freedom that way? Yeah. Did we really need it? I don't really know, because there was no trouble finding cannabis prior to this. Right. So there was always people taking it anyway, but there was a risk associated with it. You know, there's some other places that I think we have made some gains. Gun right freedom. The number of states now that are full on right to carry states, like Texas, no permit required, concealed or open. Many states are now. So we have that right back without risking a freaking felony, by the way. So you can remove restrictions, but the reality is still that most people, the reason they don't have the freedom and liberty in their life that they want is their own inaction, their own unwillingness to use status jujitsu to move the freedom ahead for them. So I'm not going to say you can't vote your way to any additional freedom, but it's very slow, very tedious. Regulations are very high on the scale of permanence, and we need to be looking at it from a standpoint of, it's great when it happens, but the more we do where we are, the better we'll benefit if more of it comes our way. We have to take freedom. It's not given. It's earned and seized. And there's never been a time in history that wasn't true. There's never been a time in history where, like, there was real tyranny and the people that were responsible for the tyranny were just like, yeah, fuck it, you can have more freedom. Right? Whether it was done with voting, whether it was done with revolution, whether it was done with civil disobedience, no matter how it's ever been done, it's been taken. Or it's not been real. Because if they can give it to you, they can take it back just as quickly. And true freedom is personable, right? It's actionable. My definition of freedom and your definition of freedom at the macro may be very similar. Basically, you should be able to do anything you want as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else or take something from anybody else, and as long as nobody can take it from you. Something to that effect. But then what do you do with it? There's people that would love all that freedom and love to live in a place, God forbid, like New York City. There's people that the very definition of freedom would be never having to go to a place like that. There's people that would want to run a business. There's people, I just want a job, man. I don't want to be a solopreneur with Jack and the GPT shit. I just want freedom. Just leave me alone. There's people that would want to own a lot of animals. There's people that want a food-based business, an ag-based business, right? A technology. Like, freedom is personal. That's the whole point. That whatever's blocking your freedom, the only person that can fix it is you. And thank you for the order, Amy. I appreciate that. So let's talk about it. What do we do for these various freedoms? Let's talk about food freedom. There's a lot of talk about that right now. RFK is going to ban food dyes. Okay, great. You know, Steak and Shake is using tallow for their fries. Yeah, okay. So the Steak and Shake thing, by the way, they batter the fries in some kind of gloop that's soaked in seed oils, pre-cooked or pre-blanched, that it goes in a freezer, and then they take the seed oil soaked battered fries out and finish them in tallow. So this is really not any better at all, right? The thing is, like, if you don't want to eat seed oils, well, that was always allowed. You don't have to. You just have to stop buying things that have seed oils pre-put into them, right? Make better choices. If you want food for you, start off with that. You don't think red dye number six or what? And I'm totally okay, again, with regulatory process removing these things from the food supply. But I'm not going to wait. If you make your own food and make smart choices about what you buy and the kind of restaurants you go to, et cetera, you can solve 90% of the problem as far as eating things you don't want right out of the gate before you even do any of the other things. Again, I'm back to that was always allowed, right? I don't think we should be eating, you know, or consuming dairy products with RGBH in them. Great, neither do I. That was always, you were always allowed to make that choice. And the government changing it won't all of a sudden make the cost of making the better choice lower for you. In time, it may, if everybody's doing it, economy of scale, push that price down. But there's going to be some premium on a premium product. That's how it works, right? So you have that freedom right now. But you can also take more responsibility. Grow your own food in any quantity possible. Right now, I don't even know if it'll work. Right now, I'm trying to grow oyster mushrooms in a Tupperware dish that's about a half a gallon in size with a 50-50 mixture of coffee grinds and hard wood fuel pellets that I dumped hot water on and melted into sawdust and mixed up with a heaping scoop of biochar in it. And I took some oyster mushrooms that I bought. I chopped the stems off several of them, cut the stems open because there's mycelium in the stem, mixed them into that and put the lid on it. And I already see mycelium growing. Will it fruit? I don't know. But that's it. Like, if I make that work, then basically you could go to the grocery store one time and at least with oyster mushrooms, buy one oyster mushroom package, start a culture and keep redoing that over and have, let's say once you get a schedule going, fresh grown mushrooms off your own waste products for almost no money, like once a week, once you know what your cycle is. Is it going to work? I don't know, but hell, you got to try. Put a garden in, get some chickens, get some ducks, get some rabbits. There's commas between those. It doesn't mean go do all that. If you go do all that right out of the gate, you will make your life miserable and realize that like half of those things just aren't for you, even when you're completely grown up, you know, as a homesteader. So do it one at a time. And that way, when you're like, you know what, chickens don't work here. Or if you're like Andy McCann, we had on last week, chickens work for Andy, ducks don't for whatever reason. Then he had ducks, he got rid of ducks and just kept the chickens, like one thing at a time. So if you have to back out of something, you can, but do something. Learn hydroponics or aquaponics, either one. Go out on your porch, grow some greens in the shade through the summer. That's one of the highest cost things at the market, right? Do things like that. No matter where you are, you can do something. And then buy local, eat whole foods, right? Like before you decide, well, I have to go to Kroger, what do you buy that you could buy from somebody locally? Well, I can't buy it year round. Buy it when it's available and then fall back to another supplier when it's not. Make a choice. Make a choice to go in at least the right direction. Support your local farmers and food systems. Don't ask for government intervention to ban food dyes. Just avoid them. I mean, it can be that simple. Like I said, that was always allowed. Reclaim your kitchen. You know, become your own food processor. Learn to make sausage. If you're an MSB member, go in to the sausage tool I made. There's like five sausage recipes in there. All you do is just change the pounds of meat you want to use. And it adjusts everything for you. I don't have a sausage stuffer. Make a loose sausage that you cook as like a breakfast sausage thing. All of them work that way. They're all delicious that way. And come up with your own ideas for things like that. Learn to cook. I talk about this all the time. You know, my 14-year-old grandson right now, you can hand him a ribeye and say, cook this for me, medium rare, and walk away and come back. Well, he'll need time to dry brine it because that's a key component to it. But from the time that it's dry brined and ready to go to seal, you come back in 25 minutes, it's perfect. He's 14. He's 14. He's 14. I taught him to, I walked him through it twice. And because he did a good job, his grandma, who's a bit of a spender sometimes on the grandkids, buys him a steak a week to cook for himself. And all he does is get better. And if I can motivate a kid with a steak a week, I'll do it. That's food freedom, right? That's food freedom. Knowing you can go to a Costco business center and buy a whole freaking New York strip for about half the cost per pound of buying New York strip in the store and just cut it into pieces. That alone is food freedom. Is it from a CAFO? Sure. That cow's still on grass for all but the last 6 weeks of its life. And it's a start. It's something. Don't poke holes in partial solutions. Use the partial solutions until you can get the whole solutions. Because when you do that, when you poke holes in, like, well, I don't want to do this. Okay, well, what are you going to do? Eat Food Lion freaking prepackaged burger slop that you're going to pay as much for as I pay for New York Strip? Okay. Because if you can find the farmer that sells a half beef to you in your area, do that. I don't have room for it. Get a deep freezer. Invest in yourself. Find a partner. Split the beef so you go a quarter beef or a half beef or whatever. Absolutely do the perfect, but don't let perfect be the enemy of the better is a new way to think about it, right? Monetary freedom. First of all, stay the hell out of debt that is not beneficial. Unless you're leveraging it to an end or doing it on an appreciating asset that exceeds the cost of the debt, don't do it. What do I mean by that? Even if you're not a business owner, it is a reasonable thing that you need a car to get to work and back. That is your business, okay? I don't have a problem financing a car. I do have a problem financing a car for your ego versus for your utility, especially if you're not to the place where you're completely financially stable yet. I know people leasing vehicles for $1,500 a month right now that have no business doing that, right? And they don't have a business, so they can't even deduct any portion of that cost. That makes no sense to me. But, you know, financing a vehicle, either lease or purchase, and that vehicle is a dependable vehicle that gets you to work and back, okay, that's a leveraged asset, even though it's depreciating in my view. A house is an appreciating asset. I have no problem with a mortgage on a house. None. As long as you buy smart, right? You got to, the asset has to be worth the investment. But most people are not going to go and pony up 400 grand out of pocket for a house. And the reality is most people would be better off not doing so. If you can get a mortgage interest right now for like 6.5-7%, you should be able to do better than 6.5-7% on your money. So that makes sense. But all of the credit card debt on bullshit, if you're buying electronics or groceries or anything that's a consumer product with debt, stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it. Don't do that. Don't tell me about your credit card points. If you are disciplined enough to do things like get cash back or Bitcoin back, even better. And what that means is at the end of every week, you go, here's all of my expenditures, and you make one online payment, and you never pay interest on your credit card, that's fine. That's a purchasing method. That's not debt, because it never becomes debt because it's not there long enough to become debt. If that freaking credit card has a balance on it at the end of the month, it's debt, and it's garbage. Don't do that. Next, make Bitcoin your economic standard. I know I say it all the time, and I know a lot of you don't like it, and every one of you that's objected to it, you're sad. You wish you would have listened to Jack in 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016. Stop me when I get to a year that you don't wish you had listened to me about it. And what I mean by it is start pricing things, at least in your head, in sats. If you start holding Bitcoin, especially if you get up to holding like 0.1 or more Bitcoin, and you look at the total sat value and you start stacking daily like I recommend, $5 a day. Instead of buying a coffee a day, buy $5 worth of Bitcoin a day. Every single day for the rest of your life. What it's going to do is you're thinking about buying something. And let's say that something is right about $1,000. Right now, that's about 1 million sats. And you say to yourself, self, I could buy the thing. I could have the thing right now. I have the $1,000. But what I'm really doing is I'm spending $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. That's what I'm doing, whether I know it or not. You might still spend the money, but you're going to think harder. You're going to make a better decision. You might say, I don't really need that. I'm going to buy this other thing for $500. I'm going to put this $500 into my DCA stack for Bitcoin. And if there's a big dip, I'm going to go ahead and roll in more. When I say make it your financial standard, I mean start pricing things in it. It's amazing what happens when you start pricing things in it. If you'd been doing that since I started talking about it, I wouldn't have to talk about it anymore. Because if you were pricing what does a house cost in Bitcoin since 2013 till today, there would be no discussion to be had. You would already be doing what I'm doing, what I'm suggesting you. Make it your base financial standard. It doesn't mean put all your money into it. It doesn't mean cash in the children's college fund. It means make it your unit of account. It will change everything about the way you think about it. Use fiat for fiat things. Like use fiat debt for fiat things. A car built today is a fiat thing, right? We should be, you think about the fact that it is not a stretch right now for people to be spending $50,000 to $80,000 on a vehicle. And not, you know, that used to buy you like a really souped up Corvette or something, right? You're getting entry level freaking Italian supercar at 80 grand just not that long ago. Now 80 grand is a nicely loaded F-150. Get the hell out of here. That is crap. It's a fiat thing because will you give it to your grandchild? And will they give it to their grand? No. No. When we used to build shit before the age of fiat, you bought a fishing reel from a company called Mitchell for about 30 bucks back in the 70s. Mitchell 300. A lot of you guys know I'm still a fan of those reels. They were made in France, right? They're about 30 bucks back in the 70s. So they were an equivalent of about $300 today. You had to save up to buy one. You know what? I've got some of them that still work. You tell me your 2025 dial was still going to work in the year 2075. We build fiat shit. Cars and down, houses and down. So when we're going to leverage fiat, let's lever it against the thing that we know was designed in the fiat space, and let's make everything else our unit of account in hard money. Next, create multiple income streams. I think everybody should have a business. That's why I'm jazzed about this GPT course. I think it's going to make it more doable for people. We have some other things that are coming. Anyone can call us, which model of Daiwa? It doesn't matter, bro. I guarantee you, if you buy a Daiwa today and take perfect care of it, no one will be using it in the year 2075. No one. It'll be thrown in a dustbin somewhere. So build a business, and there's multiple points of leverage. We talked about this recently, but it is not just that now I have an income stream that is independent of somebody else's opinion, right? Your boss has an opinion of your value. His boss has an opinion of his value and your value. They have an opinion of how much money the company makes. They have an opinion of how much of that amount of money you're entitled to based on what you do. Their opinion may not be wrong, but it's still their opinion. Wouldn't it be great if it was your opinion? It will never be your opinion in a business you do not own or at least have ownership in. And most of you that have a JOB will never have ownership in your business. Or if you do, it'll be some pathway to like 1% or something where you don't get a say in things, but maybe you get a little riff once a year or something. That is not ownership. Ownership means you have some say in the control and operation of the business. When you build a business of your own, you have 100% say and control in the operation of the business, unless you choose to bring in a partner and delegate some of that to them. Additionally, you have the ability to earn money all the time. I make money on Saturday morning while I'm snoring, and I sleep in late till 7 a.m. instead of get up at 6 a.m. like I do during work days. I'm making money while I sleep. You know, I make money on Sunday. Yesterday, I spent all day Sunday. I call it Mother's Wife Day, right? My son and his wife and the grandkids came over, and we ordered fried chicken, fiat fried chicken. That's because it was what everybody wanted. It made it easy. We sat out on the porch. We watched the kids play. My son played with his kids. He got like that freedom to just play with them instead of having to like do your work. And it was freaking fantastic. And you know what? I made money. Not as much money as I do in a week where I'm putting out content and all, but I made money. Renewals came in for MSB. You know, people were pre-ordering the Kindle book anyway. Somebody bought a course at Home Food Systems. People were using T-Spaz links. I make money 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I don't say that to brag. I say that to encourage you. You can do that too. You build the right kind of business, there's some cash flow on a daily basis in. If I figure out what I make per hour on a 40-hour week, it's really, really high. But it's not a real good assessment. The better assessment of how many hours do you work a week versus what a week's average revenue is after expenses. But the real number per hour would be how much money do you make on average per week divided by, I think it's 165 hours or 164 hours. It's something like that, hours in a week. That's the real amount of money I make per hour, but it's not per hour worked. There's a leverage tool there that you'll never have with a job. And it can be acquired different ways. You can write a book and have a royalty agreement, right? You can write music and have a royalty agreement. There's a lot of ways to create a renewable income other than a straight-up business. But you should have something. Because the other side of it is even more powerful is the tax advantages. My wife and I are going to go out tonight. It's our anniversary. It also landed on Book Publication Day. We are going to celebrate the book's launch, and we are going to discuss where we go from here with it and the other things I'm working on, Tom, with the GPT course. So I'm going to take my wife out to a very nice place for on our anniversary, and it's a complete business meal, and there's no way to – I could make a video and send it to the IRS and say this is what I'm doing, and they go, well, yeah, okay, 50% deductible. So I'm going to earn money, spend it, and pay tax on what's left. You're going to earn money, pay tax, and spend what's left, spend or save or invest what's left. You see the difference, the dynamic there. If I leave from my office, technically – it's business mileage. So now I've got a 70-cent a mile deduction. If I take an Uber, oh, that's taxis, cabs, and transportation. That's deductible, right? There's a shitload of things that I deduct that you can't. Many of them I only have because they're actual expenses against the business. Many of them I would have without the business, but by incorporating them into the business, they become deductible. So not only do you earn more, do you earn when you're not doing direct work? You also keep more with a business. And the more income streams you have, the more the diverse those income streams are, the more you could justify as expenses. This isn't cheating. I am not a tax. I pay the IRS every dollar I legally owe them. I employ a really great lawyer and a really great accountant to make sure that that number is legally and factually as low as possible. You see how that works? I won't just give you my money. You will have to show me that I owe it to you. And you have to prove that I owe it, or otherwise you don't get it. That is the freedom from being able to do this. That's what we're talking about, right? Next, medical freedom. Don't wait for permission to be healthy. The hell is that about, right? Learn herbalism and self-care. Imagine this. For the next year, starting now, since the New Year's already come and gone, you don't have to wait for New Year's for a year of resolutions. For the next year, what is it, 52 weeks a year? Let's take two off. Let's just take 2 weeks off around Christmas and the holidays. You're just not going to do it. Otherwise, you're going to do this. Once every 2 weeks, you're going to pick one herb. You're going to learn what it is, what it does, and how to use it. How are you going to do that? ChatGPT. And you're going to sanity check it against some reality. But you're going to learn how to make a salve or an extract or a tincture with it and what it does. You're just going to do that one herb every 2 weeks, and you can do this easily in a day. And maybe you need the 2 weeks to make the extraction or get a hold of the materials or whatever. What are you at the end of that 1 year? You are a damn solid home herbalist. What was the cost? Check shit. Jack shit, because the materials are basically less than buying a couple bottles of aspirin and ibuprofen, right? What can it save you, right? And it's not just that. I mean, if that was it, then everybody would do it, right? You have to build your own natural medicine cabinet and educate yourself on holistic healing. But it also might be a good idea to stop doing things that make you sick. If you have a habit that is detrimental to your health, like smoking or drinking too much, stop. Look, that's too simple. No, it's too effective. And you're afraid of it being effective. Quit. If you've gone from smoking cigarettes to using vapes, quit that shit. Go look up how bad. It's less bad, I think, maybe. But if you're vaping daily, like you replace smoking with it, man, the damage it's doing to people's lungs may be worse than tobacco. You're spending a lot of money on something that's making you sick. Here's a little thing you could do. Figure out the cost of your vice, especially if it's a vice you really know you should quit. What is the daily cost of it? And ask GPT. if I took this amount of daily money and put it into Bitcoin and factored in the last 8 years compounded annual growth rate of 30%, how much money would I have in 5 years, 10 years, and 15 years? Short answer, numbers only, don't show me your work. Just look at the number. You'll probably want to, again, we're back, like, so we're interlocking these now. You're making Bitcoin your unit of account. And then say, assume the compounded annual growth rate is only 50% as good as it's been. So it's 15%. Same numbers. It'll still be enough to shock the shit out of you. It'll shock. And you have to say, like, am I willing to pay that much money? Future me is paying that much money for this vice now that I know I should quit anyway. Improve your health. It'll cost less in health care if you're healthy. Right? It will cost you less. And how much do you, the average person out there that's on Ozempic or on some sort of diabetic medication or something, people are paying thousands of dollars a month just in drug costs that lifestyle could make go away. I have a family member, I won't say who, but they got one of those continuous glucose monitors. Okay? This is like not close family, but family. She got rid of it because it kept going off too often. This is a person asking for their feet to come off. Don't be, and this is a person that I will tell you that this person is very much a Democrat and very much believes in healthcare for all. Right? Healthcare is a human right type of person. I don't want to pay for your healthcare when you turned off your glucose monitor because it kept going off too often. That's because you're killing yourself. Don't do that. And again, as far as your medical freedom, all of these things have always been allowed. You didn't need the government to let you do this. You just needed to make better choices, right? Seek alternative health care where it makes sense. Find independent doctors, naturopaths, or functional medical practitioners who are on your side. Your doctor should be your advocate, not your commander, right? Take these drugs, do these things, right? It should be like, let's team up and let's make you healthy. Chiropractors, the right chiropractors, not all of them. I'd say it's about 50-50. You got to find the right one. But chiropractors are really good at this because they have to be, because they can't default to drugs and they don't make money with drugs. They make money by having customers who are really into coming back to them. So they have to be getting good results, right? But yeah, and direct primary care is another great option. A DPC is probably the best health choice you can make. And I would say, like, going into a health share versus health insurance, along with retaining a DPC, is probably a really great strategy. It'll put money back in your pocket and you'll end up healthier, so your cost of healthcare will be lower. We do not have a health insurance problem in this country. Health insurance is not a problem. It is the problem. It is the problem. Go look at what it costs to have a baby in the 50s, what you paid for a hospital room per day. Right? We have better care now. No, we have a fuckload more administrators now. Go look at the growth per capita on what happened in 1971. It's a website you can look up. Just tons of graphs. Go look what happened per capita when we went off of hard money in 1971 for the relationship of administrators in healthcare versus doctors and nurses in healthcare. Doctors and nurses in healthcare have not grown per capita since 1971. At all. It's a flat line. It's a little bit of growth, but it's not much. Per capita means how many doctors there are per people, right? So there's more doctors, but there's more people, so you would expect there to be. So the ratio stayed the same, doctors and nurses, and actual practitioners of healthcare, like MAs, et cetera, it's all the same. Then look at the growth rate of administrators. It's exponential. There's your cost. There's your overhead. It's a regulatory burden, and it's this absolute incessant need of drug manufacturers to actually treat illness versus cure disease. So there's a whole system designed to make sure you stay sick. Is it intentional or is it just a natural result of the system as it's built? It doesn't matter. You have a choice to go around it. It's a very simple choice, but you have to make it. How about educational freedom? Teach yourself and your children. Again, this was always allowed. Now, I am a big advocate of homeschooling, unschooling, co-ops, all of that. I think Acelus has been the number one thing I've recommended from a standpoint of how many people have done it that I've earned nothing on. There's no affiliate program with Acelus. I'm not affiliated with them. I don't have a partnership agreement. I probably should reach out and ask for one, honest to God. But I don't have anything like that. Just telling people about it. And I've had more than one person who I know IRL, right, in real life, comes and hangs out and stuff, say, the biggest thing you ever did for me and my family was tell me about that. My best friend has said that more than once, my best friend David. He's like, the best thing you ever did for me and my family was tell me about Acelus. When I got Lex into Acelus, everything changed. He came out excited. He was telling me what he learned. I didn't have to ask him. Right? So I think it's a great program. Does it work for everyone? No. No, it doesn't. Am I so committed to it that I'm militant about it? No. No. And I'll tell you why. Why you know that. This fall, my grandson, who's 14 and a half now, will be going to regular school. It's not my choice. I would personally prefer that he stayed in the program that he's in. He wants to play baseball at a competitive level. The school that he'll go to is a 6A school. It's big time with sports. He wants to be part of that. I'm not going to stand in his way. But I do know this. The foundation he was given will make him excel there. And if he decides it's not for him, then he can come back. My granddaughter has no plans to do that anytime soon, but who knows when she's 14 herself. Maybe she'll want more social. If they choose it, they choose it. But give it to them where you can and where it works. And if you don't homeschool, then you better teach them anyway. Create your own lessons for them to learn. Create two lessons a week and sit down and do it with them. I know where you can develop those lessons for free, right? I know you're, as I program it, ChatGPT. Help me develop a course, 1 hour long, to help my student child learn about X. They are this old. Ask me five questions, one at a time, before you start developing the course. And just go through it. Give us videos we can watch, podcasts we can listen to, books we can read. It's not that hard. Teach them one thing a week like that. Teach them one thing every 2 weeks, like I said, for you to learn about herbs. Take them along with the herbal journey. You're going to do this with daddy and mommy. I don't want to. I don't care. A lot of shit parents make kids do they don't want to do. They end up better off for it if we pick wisely for them. Children, here's the thing about children. By necessity of nature, a child is born into captivity. You don't like that word? You don't believe me? Okay, take a newborn baby, like a couple hours old, set it free in a field. What happens to it? It dies. Something kills it. Something eats it. Like, it's a horrible thing to even think about. Nobody with anything approaching a heart would do that. The fucking Grinch, before he found Christmas, would not have done that, right? So what does that mean? That means that child is your captive. Do you let it go wherever it wants? Once it starts crawling around, you put it in a pen. We literally call it a pen. You put baby, once they start walking, you put baby gates in. Because if they escape, they can hurt themselves. The job of the parent is to release that child into freedom, total, complete freedom, by the time we consider them an adult. And that means we are reducing their layers of captivity over time if we do our job right. If you have as many rules for a 16-year-old as you did for them when they were a 6-year-old, you either have a true problem child, which is unlikely, or you are the problem. I used to sit down with my son every time there was conflict with rules and have this conversation with him and say, my goal for you is for next year you have less rules than you have now. If you want that too, then we have to work together on this. School, education, et cetera, works the same way. There are things that you're going to say. I'll tell you another thing. My kid was not big on activities. Like, pick one. Pick one activity. Baseball, soccer, I don't care what it is. He kind of sort of liked basketball, but he didn't want to. Okay, you know what? You're doing basketball. You don't want to do basketball. Pick something else. But you're going to have something you do outside of the house with people outside of school, and you're going to do it. I don't want it. I don't get it. Dropped his ass off. Here's your coach. Do what he says. Amazing what happens. Kid ended up being a great basketball player, right? Ended up loving it even more. If he would have hated it, then he would have been motivated to find something else to do, right? Treat education that way with your kids. If they don't want to learn something and you say, here's a list of five things. Pick one. And if you don't by the end of the week, then dad's going to pick one. And then you lead them through it. It's your fucking job. And again, this was always allowed, okay? Teach critical thinking and life skills. Supplement their learning with practical knowledge like financial literacy, entrepreneurship, philosophy. You don't have to take them all the way really fast. Don't expect an 8-year-old to get really excited about entrepreneurship to the point where they want to actually build a business, but they might. But if you expose them to it over time, then the possibility grows within them. And the number one thing that creates a divide with people between what they say they want and what they do is a belief that it's possible. I know that sounds like ethereal bullshit, but it's not. Here's what I mean. Anybody can build a business, but only about 5% of people will build a successful business in their entire life. 5% will, but 100% could. The difference is not luck, right? It's not luck, right? It's not benevolence by the overlords. It's belief. If you believe you can do a thing, unless it's ridiculous, you'll figure out how. If you have the belief and the desire, you have to have both. What I mean by ridiculous is if you believe that you're going to be able to come up with a technology that will be the size of an aspirin tablet that you can stick it up your ass and float around like Iron Man, you probably won't get that done. But if anybody has done it ever, you can do it too. And if it's never been done, it's still possible. It's just harder. But is it within the realm of possibility? Is it a 0-to-1 leap? A 0-to-1 leap is huge. A 0-to-1 leap was when Benz put an internal combustion engine in a carriage long before the Model T and Henry Ford. That was a 0-to-1. We had horse-powered vehicles, and we had autonomously the vehicle powered itself. That was a 0-to-1, okay? And it wasn't even really the 0-to-1. The 0-to-1 was we have no internal combustion engine, and now we do. That's a 0-to-1. That's hard. The Benz thing was like a 1 to a 1.1, and that's hard. But if you're like, I want to do a business, and it does XYZ, if somebody's done it, you can do it, though. Right? I mean, there's people that talk to me like, it's going to be really hard to do the business I want to do. Well, what? I like landscaping. That's not hard. Well, I need a permit. Either get a permit or move. Don't cry to me about your bullshit. Like, there's like 10 guys running around with trucks and freaking day laborers in the back of it right now doing what you say you want to do and you say you can't do it. You just haven't done it yet. Of course you can do it. So you need to teach kids that concept. Empower them to question everything. They're your future. Treat them like it. You know, children are the future. Right, Whitney Houston, right? Teach them how to let them lead the way, or whatever the damn song was. That shit, right? Okay, yeah, okay, it sounds nice, but let's make it more practical. They're going to be in charge when you're old as shit and you're all wrinkly and you can't do things for yourself anymore. Do you want yes men in charge then, or do you want people that are critical thinkers that are actually in charge that can actually help you and have respect for you? And I don't even mean just your kids. I mean everybody's kids. When you're, you know, I don't care what age you are right now, but when you're 85, assuming you're still here, then the people that are going to be in charge are going to be the 30 to 50-year-olds. That's your kids. Treat it that way because it is that serious. Because even if everybody else doesn't do it, at least your kids will be in that mode, right? Next, let's talk about digital information freedom. This is one that's so easy, but you don't do it, right? Use alternative platforms. Just start there. And you don't have to like 100% use them, but at least use them. Learn how they work. Don't rely on centralized platforms that censor you. Like, use Noster. Get on Noster. It's not hard. I tried and it didn't work. How long did you try for? 5 minutes? When it didn't work, did you like, I don't know, go to Google or ChatGPT and say, I'm trying to set up Noster and I did this thing and this is what happened and what do I do next? No, you didn't try. You didn't try. You clicked a link, you did a thing, it didn't work, and you quit. You didn't even try. All you did was quit. Trying doesn't count until you get past the first problem through your own effort. Until you get past the first problem or accomplish the objective, you have not tried. If you get past the first obstacle, you've at least tried some. You haven't really tried until you succeeded. It changes everything to think that way. So don't cry to me. Don't bitch. Don't say you can't. Because somehow, there's almost 30,000 people that follow me on Noster. That's not a brag. It's just true. And I'm trying to make a point with it. The point is, all 30,000 of those people had to first set up on Noster and start using it so they could follow me. So that means almost 30,000 people were able to do what you say it doesn't work and you can't do. Don't you sound like a little bitch now? And there's hundreds of thousands of people following people like Jack Dorsey on there. So that's hundreds of thousands of people that did what you said doesn't work and can't be done. You have not tried. And that's not about Noster. That's about anything you bring that bullshit to me or anybody else with, I tried and it didn't work. Well, did anybody else do it? Yeah, then you didn't try. You fucked around with it. You got bored with it. You found it to be tedious. You didn't think it was worth it, so you went to do something else. If you really don't believe it's worth the effort, fine, but do you know what the effort is and what the payoff is? Like, I think being on a network with hundreds of thousands of people who all have a payment method and a direct payment platform, and some of them are really wealthy people, is probably worth doing. By the way, you know who doesn't follow me on X Twitter? Jack Dorsey. You know who does follow me on Noster? Jack Dorsey. Multi-billionaire. Follows little old me. Right? You don't have that access on these centralized platforms. You have it on these emerging platforms. But even things like Rumble. I'm over on Rumble. I see myself there right now. I'm about 10 seconds behind in the feed, muted, so I can see if anybody's chatting over there. Nobody is. There's 14 people there. There's like 80 on YouTube. Why are you still on YouTube, Jack? Because all of you are. Because all of you are. And they pay me money. And I know Rumble's centralized, but you know what Rumble's never done? It's never taken down one of my videos. It's never demonetized me. It's never given me a demerit. It never made me go to re-education camp. It didn't dig up a video that was 6 years old and flag it for violent imagery when the imagery was a stock photo of something that happened in the middle of World War II. It was completely within the context of the video I was doing, and it wasn't that graphic, and you had to really look at it hard to see what they had a problem with. Rumble's never done that. So to me, they're an alternative, if still centralized, platform. But any decentralized system you can use to express your thoughts, right, use them. We're going to see about doing some more with that in the future. When you control it, even if it's centralized, at least the person controlling it, if you can trust them, you know what their rules are. You know, I really hate it that we gave up on the forum. Sometimes I think about that, the Survival Podcast forum. People just weren't using it anymore. Everyone migrated out to Facebook and Twitter and Telegram and what have you. And because of that, we're actually less powerful because the whole community is spread out, which is great from a guerrilla perspective, but there's less power of collaboration. And I wonder, as people are starting to switch onto this, if we had just toughed it out through that, if maybe it would have resurged. You know, I don't know, but there may be some things coming in the future that allows TSP community to communicate completely uncensored in a very easy way. But that's out a little bit for right now. I can only do so much at once. Control your own archive, man. You know, start your own podcast if you want to, or at least feed, host your content. Protect your own personal data. Get a Start9 server or some form of way to store your data and access it when you're not at home, to where you can access everything that you have. Like when you're in your house and you're like, well, this is where I keep these pictures, this is where I keep these files, et cetera, you should have some form of an extranet where you can actually come in and get that information that's encrypted, protected, and uncensorable. Why? Because it's your fucking data. That's why. Because your data is some of the most valuable shit you have. That's why. Because no one has a right to prevent you from doing it. That's why. Because you can. That's why. Because you can. That was always allowed, right? Use encryption with everything you can. You know, the government surveillance state is ridiculous. You know, you should send, just for the fuck of it, like once a week, get your aunt on some encrypted email that you both have access to that's encrypted on both sides, and send her a picture of a cat hanging out of a tree in full encryption. just so she learns how to use it and so that the NSA can spend 6 months decrypting a picture of a fucking cat. Right? I mean, if we all did that, we could the surveillance state, we could shut, as far as surveillance of our communications, our private communications, I don't care if what I'm doing right now is encrypted. It's on freaking YouTube. It's going to go to like 18 different podcast platforms. Right? It's subject to rebroadcasting anywhere. My distribution policy is please redistribute. So I'm not going to encrypt what I'm putting out for the public, but if I'm sending my wife an email, it's encrypted. It's encrypted. It might be, hey, honey, make sure we have a reservation for 5 tonight at Riata. I don't care. It's encrypted. You know why? Because fuck them is why. That's why. Why? Because fuck them. Because they have no business knowing that, no business surveilling that, no business nothing. And every resource that they expend on bullshit makes their entire surveillance apparatus weaker. And it should be weaker. If they were only doing what they claim, I actually wouldn't care. If they were only looking for the next bomber, if they were only looking for the next terrorist, that would be, but that's not what they're doing, and we all know that. You wouldn't have a data center the size of the one that the NSA has in Utah if that's all they were doing. You wouldn't need to keep all this data from millions of people for tens of years if that's all you were doing. No, they're building dossiers on every one of us. So let's not make it any easier. Let's just make better choices. And again, that was already allowed. Encrypt and secure everything. Take control of your privacy. Use tools if you're not going to get like a Start 9 box or whatever. Or use the above suite of services from above phone. At least use Proton Mail. Use VPNs. Use encrypted messaging apps. You know, Telegram is not encrypted in a group chat, but individual to individual, all you have to do is secret chat. It's encrypted. How good is it? It's better than you think. Same with Signal. It's better than you think it is. The person that poo-pooed it on, you know, whatever platform you're on, they don't fucking know. They heard somebody said. My favorite thing that makes me immediately write off somebody's comment on social media, I read somewhere that I'm done. They might even be right, but that's not going to work on me. I read somewhere that, yeah, I don't know who said it, under what context, and how. And 9 times out of 10, when I track that down, it's bullshit. So, again, it all goes together. Think independently and critically in your digital and information freedom choices. Location freedom. Reclaim your space. Right? What's the saying in real estate? It's all about what? 3 words and they're all the same. They all start with an L and it's not loser, right? Location, location, location. Yeah, I agree. And sometimes a location is good for property value, but it's not good for freedom value. What do you value more? How much your house is worth on paper, and then they figure out how much to tax you based on that number, so you get to live in your house and pay for it and pay the state for the privilege of living in your own house. That's property value. That's the location, location, location for property value. And if you're a landlord and you're renting to somebody, that's actually kind of really good. Yeah. I mean, really it is. But if you're worried about freedom, location, 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 you take on a whole different view of things. When I moved into this property, and it's all cleaned up now, but the property to my west had like an excavator and 3 pieces laying on it, 2 busted-ass single wide trailers that were just, I mean, thieves had ripped the thing out and was still and pulled the copper out of the walls. It was decrepit. It was overgrown. It was bad. And my real estate agent was like, oh. But she was all worried about how, and I'm like, oh, that's fine. I don't care. I don't live there. All that meant to me was nobody's going to tell me dick about what I can do here. Maybe I'll buy it. Maybe sooner or later, you know, shit like that gets cleaned. No one was living there that way. Sooner or later, problems like that tend to fall themselves. Or eventually, like, the forest would have just come up around it and made it all disappear anyway. So I don't care. What I cared was I could have a chicken or a duck, or I didn't know what I was going to do yet, maybe sheep. I could build an aquaponic system. I could put a pond in. Geology-wise, I can't, right? But I could do whatever I want. I don't have to ask anybody's permission. That was location, location for me. Do you know I could run a commercial business on this property? Because there's no zoning. I could go over to my west pasture and put in a restaurant if I want to. You know who could do anything about it? No fucking buddy. I'm not going to because it's not my business, but I could. I could go put a thousand square foot facility over there, specifically environmentally controlled, designed to grow mushrooms and microgreens. And if my grandson wants to someday, I might finance that. And you know what anybody can do about it? Nothing. I put a sign up, sale direct to the public. You know what they do? Nothing. Do you know what I could do if I lived 1.25 miles to the east like that? Nothing. I couldn't do any of it. Location, location, location. If you have to, for what you value most in liberty, pick up snakes and move. And sometimes it's not six states away. Sometimes it's six counties away. Sometimes it's 6 miles. But it's expensive. Everything in life is expensive. Living is expensive. In the middle of summer, when it gets really hot out, it's like 105 degrees outside, and I tell my wife, I want it cold in here. She says, cold is expensive, and I say, and I'm willing to pay the bill. You're right. Cold is expensive, but I'd rather be cold than hot. Same thing in winter. When it gets really cold, we turn the heat on. She says, heat's expensive, and I said, I'm willing to pay for it. Things are expensive. Things are expensive, and it's okay. We just have to make wise decisions in how we spend the money. Is it worth it is the question that we need to be asking. Live in the gray. Be the gray man. I think I did a show. First show I ever did on being the gray man, I probably need to do that again, was like in 2008. That's how far this goes back, right? If moving is impossible, find ways to operate under the radar. Minimize your interaction with the system. You know, I want a business in food. Okay. I can't do that here because even though I have enough property to grow enough, if I start doing it, the Department of Making Sad will come. Got a basement, microgreens and mushrooms, or something else? I don't know, right? Quail, rabbits, are they seen? If they're not seen, then they don't. Karens complain about what they see. Karens complain about what they hear, right? And Karens complain about what they smell, right? You don't have to say speak, hear, speak, see, right? Like, no. See, Karens aren't monkeys. They always speak evil. You can't stop the speaking of a Karen. But the speaking and who they speak to about it is always based on what they see, what they hear, and what they smell. You control those three things. You can pretty much do anything you want, anywhere you want. I'll put it this way. Back in the 80s, before we had all this cannabis freedom, I had a friend, lived about 30 minutes away from me, and we used to make pilgrimages to his house on weekends as 16-year-olds. Why do you think that we were going to his house? We didn't stay there very long either, right? Why do you think we went to his house? What do you think we got at his house? I say he was a friend. He was more like a supplier. And everything he did happened in closets. Do you think he was allowed to do that? That was actually illegal. What we're talking about here is like code violations. Build risk cost into your economic model. I mean, if I'm running a business and it's a side hustle, it makes me 25 grand a year, and I end up getting fined once a year $500 for it, I don't give a shit. I don't care. Here's your $500. That's just illegal for a fee, or legal for a fee, I guess, is what how you would look at that. And then learn from it. Yes, that is the word that we used to use back then. That's just for the people in the live stream. Moving on with that, reclaim your property. Good fences make good neighbors. The main reason for that isn't because it keeps people out. It keeps eyeballs out. Put in a fence people can't see through. The people that cleaned up the property next to me, they wanted to put in an RV park. You have to be 50 or older, and you have to rent, I think, for at least 2 months at a time to stay there. They put in the septic, the electric, and everything as an additional way to make some money, which I think is great. They really didn't like the way my property looked for what they were renting because they were going to have the RVs back straight up to my fence line. They didn't complain. They put in a true privacy fence. It's about 6 foot tall, and it's made with roofing metal. I don't see them, and they don't see me, and I didn't have to pay for it. I love it. But I'm thinking about maybe putting one of those along some other places. Because I talked to the guys that did it. It wasn't that expensive. It wasn't that much more than doing chain link, which is what I have. It has some real advantages over chain link from longevity and some other things. And, you know, my fence was put in the 70s, so it's going to sooner or later have to be redone. So it's maybe it'll happen that way. It's just, you know. And is that the right fence ever? No. It's not the right. But it is for certain things. Just a standard 6 foot wooden privacy fence, like in most suburbs in Texas already have, can be very useful. Natural fences, you know, hedge fences. I think if I ever decided to actually make Jackistan a thing and I owned like 1,000 acres, I think I'd have it perimeter hedge fenced with all kinds of like freaking wild rose and shit. You go through, you know, jujube trees and shit. Like you go through there, you look like you fought with a couple tigers, you know, while you were drunk or something. It just isn't worth it. And then the house would be, you can't even see it, like a winding road. And then like, that's where I live. And you can't see what I'm doing. You can't complain about it. So fencing in one way or another, you know, do things that make the space truly yours and increase the value of your property in ways that are difficult for government to assess. Government doesn't know what the value of a permaculture food forest is. It doesn't know what the value of a garden is. It doesn't understand these things. It's not possible because they're not commoditized. You put a pond in, they do know eventually, and they do assess that into your property value and your taxes. You probably are still ahead, but there's a lot of things you can do, like plant 100 trees, and they'll talk about it. What's the value of 100 mature walnut trees that your grandchildren will inherit someday? Government doesn't need to know about that, right? Make the space your own. Time freedom. Take your time back. Cut out time wasters. Recognize where your time is being stolen and take it back by saying no more often. One of the most important lessons I had to learn is successful people say no a lot. I used to say yes to almost everything, especially if it was involving me go to speak somewhere. And I mean even before TSP. And there's a time for it in my life. It's part of how I got good at it. But now, I like Nicole Sauce is always like, why don't you ever put that speaker page on your site that you said you're going to? And I'm like, because I'd have to charge like $6,000 to $8,000 an event to do it, to make it worth doing. And she's like, why don't you put it up and put $6,000 to $8,000 per event on it? And I'm like, because somebody will pay it and then I'll have to do it. And I don't really want to. I know that sounds arrogant, but it's true. I don't want to leave my house. I don't want to leave my wife to herself to have to deal with all the crap here while I'm gone. I don't want to pull up out of my business. It's my passion that I love. That's not what I want to do. So I don't do it except on very rare occasions, which means if I am speaking somewhere and you don't get to come to one of my events and you want to see me in person, you should probably go because it's not going to happen a lot. And if you don't care, then don't go, right? Do what you want to do, but learn to say no, especially to anything that actually damages your productive time. Now, you still need time for recreation and things like that. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about the literal time vampire shit. Get it out of your life. Track your time, at least for a couple weeks. You know how I talk about tracking your diet when you buy food for storage and not even saying like, so you'll get healthier, but if you do, you might, because you might be like, shit, this is what I eat. If you've never heard this before, when you start to decide what food am I going to stockpile for my, you know, 30 to 60 day readiness plan for food, well, you should store what you eat and we store. So the first thing to do is figure out what you eat. Get a simple notebook, right? Write down everything you eat, and every time you eat something more than once, put a star next to it. And if it's something you eat more than once and it stores without going in the refrigerator, put 2 stars next to it. And real quick, you get a list of things that you should store for yourself and your family. It costs no money, right? You can use free paper you steal from work off the printer if you have to. Take the shit that's been printed and they were going to throw away, so it's not really stealing, and use the backside if it's not too side printed. Just be creative. You can do this for free. The ink and the pen cost you money, I guess. And then you know. Do the same thing with your time. How do you actually spend your time every day? Track your time at work. You probably should hide that from your employer because they saw it. They might fire you or at least cut your pay because most of you do not work the entire time you're there, and that's okay. But if you track it, you might figure out, you know what, the slack off stuff is not my problem. It's the fuck off stuff when I look like I'm working, but I'm not. And I'm not even fucking off doing something that benefits me. This is where you should get into the definition of cheating real quick. People think cheating means anytime you break the rules, right? But if you're breaking the rules to no end or to a poor end, it's not cheating, it's failing. To me, cheating means you'll get ahead. So when people like say, I cheated on my diet. No, you didn't. What's the goal of your diet? To lose weight. Did that help you lose weight? No, then you didn't cheat. You failed. You see how different that is, right? If you're cheating on a test because there's three words, you know, your kid in school, like eighth grade, and you have like a spelling test. And of the 20 words, you have three you keep spelling wrong. So you make a crib sheet of just those three words. That's cheating. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's ethical or moral, but it is cheating because you broke the rules in a way that if you get away with it, benefit you. Now you got 100 on your test instead of a, I don't know, what would it be, a 85, right? That's cheating. And you might say, well, it actually hurts you in the long run because I have autocorrect on my fucking computer and I don't care what you're going to say next, right? The risk was getting caught. If I got away with it, it benefited me. Again, it's not necessarily moral or ethical, but it benefit. That's cheating. If what you do does not benefit you in the end, you didn't cheat, you failed. That will be a law of life in book two. I think there will be a book two given on how well this first one is going. But it's the truth. And so when you start tracking your time, you'll realize that a lot of times when you think you're cheating, you're actually failing. And when you figure out what that is, you can fix it. So you can be a more productive employee. So you can ask for more money, or you can give yourself more free time at work to not fuck off, but to work on your own shit when you can get away with it, so that you become more portable as an employee or move into a business mode. Just a different way to look at things, right? Create time buffers. Stop living in a rush. Start scheduling some of your activities and schedule breaks. The way you avoid taking breaks when you shouldn't is to have breaks when you should. It's permaculture. I don't want this particular weed species growing in this area. Well, what does the gardener do? Right, and I mean the conventional landscaper. Oh, just keep pulling it out. I'll mulch over it, which will improve the fertility and make it grow faster. And I'll keep pulling it out. What does the permaculturist do? I'm going to plant something I do want in the space. I'm going to gild it out. That's what you have to do with time buffers. By having breaks and actually requiring them of yourself. I must take a break. It's 2:15 on a Wednesday. I take breaks at 2:15 on Wednesday. Then you don't take the breaks that go on for too long. You know, another way, and this will also be in book two if it happens, and it probably will, is do the things you hate first. Every day you should look at, these are the things I must do today for today to be a success. If I don't do them, I haven't cheated. I have failed. Of this group of things, here's the one, two, or three that I least want to do. Move them straight to the beginning of the day, and the rest of the day is a downhill fucking run. It's easy. Legal and regulatory freedom. Use the system against itself. This is where Jack's word of status jujitsu comes in. Don't fight the system. Work within its rules to get what you need while minimizing your exposure. Learn the rules so that you can actually cheat versus fail. And what I mean by cheat is you rearrange the way that the framework is. Sometimes just by changing the wording of what you're doing, it becomes legal. Sometimes by moving where you do the thing, it becomes legal. Sometimes by moving the place that the entity is existing, it becomes legal. All right. So the activity's here, but the entity is here. And now all of a sudden it's legal, or at least you can get away with it. Right, that's the type of status jujitsu we're talking about. Understand your rights and assert them. Don't wait for other people to defend your rights. Now, let me tell you what not to do. You get pulled over by a cop, and he's going to write you a ticket for a thing, and you think you're right. Tell that to a judge, not to a cop. Okay? Tell that to a judge, not to a cop. However, the same could be said is, I'd like to search your vehicle. Why? Why? Here's one that where I was going to get a ticket, and I didn't tell it to a judge, but I would have, and I told the cop that I knew better than he did, and I was very nice about it. In Texas, it turns out, do you know how when you get up to a red light, if there's no traffic oncoming, you're making a right-hand turn, that you can treat that like a stop sign, basically. The way is clear, and I'm going right on red, unless a sign says you can't. Turns out in the state of Texas, and I learned this from another ticket I got when I was young and broke, and so I took defensive driving to get the ticket knocked down and not have my insurance go up, that if you're turning onto a one-way street and it's a left, okay, you can treat it like going right on red. I don't know if it's true in your state. It is in the state of Texas. So this cop pulls me over. It's exactly what happened. Pull up. It's an access road. It only goes one way. There is opposing traffic, but there is no traffic. It's completely clear. And the road I'm turning onto by the letter of the law is a one-way road. I didn't say, hey, Mr. Stupid, you don't know anything. I just said, hey, officer, I don't mean to tell you how to do your job. And if you want to write me a ticket, you can go ahead. However, can I tell you something, please? That was shocking to him. Not, hey, here's a camera in your face. A dash camera. I should have turned, but I didn't have one yet. I now do. But yeah, he goes, well, what? Kind of a little pissy, but, you know, reasonable. So, well, my understanding of the law is in the state of Texas, I was turning left at a red light onto a one-way street. That's completely legal within the bounds of the law. And if you want to write me a ticket, you can. But unless that's changed, and I have not heard that it has, and unless you have some sort of local ordinance that overrides the state law, maybe you should call that in before you write me the ticket. Because maybe you don't want to go in front of a judge, and I come in and say that, and it turns out I'm right. But it's up to you. If you want to write me the ticket, I'll sign it, and I'll see you in court. He looked really pissed, and then he looked a little confused, and then he looked like he was thinking. Kind of people, when they're thinking, they kind of look like a kid taking a dump in their diaper, right? And then he goes back to his car. He comes back 5 minutes later, hands me my license, says, Mr. Spirico, I'm sorry, you're correct. That's the right way to assert your rights. Now, if you want to write the ticket, go ahead and write the ticket. If I'm wrong, I'll find out in front of the judge. Or I'll go home, look it up, and see if it changed, and be like, well, shit, I'm wrong. I'm not going to go to court, and I'm not going to waste my time. What did that interaction with that cop save me? It saved me the time of going to court. I didn't want to go to court. That's why I bothered to do it. But I also did it in a very polite way. Assert your rights. If you're told something by a cop, like, hey, you can either talk to us now, or we can take you to the station. Really? Why would you take me to the station? Are you charging me with something? We do this the easy way or the hard way. What's the hard way? And can you really do that? Am I free to go? Because if I'm free to go, I'm leaving. I'm not talking to you. That's asserting your rights. That's not being rude, right? Like, you know what kind of person asks for a lawyer, Mr. Spirico? Yes, I do. Well, what kind would that be? Smart people. It's exactly what you would do if you were in my position, wouldn't you? So either cut me loose or tell me what you're charging me with. That's asserting your rights. It's also asserting your rights, things you can do on your property. It's another quick story. We'll move on. Long, long time ago, way before TSP, I was sitting in my backyard shooting a pellet gun at a proper pellet trap. Karen neighbor, before we called them Karens, calls the police. Young gal comes out, police lady, about 4'7", should not be a cop. Somebody just pick her up and kill her against the wall in a half a second before she pulled her gun. Bad hiring practices. I'm sorry. That kind of person shouldn't be a cop. But anyway, she told me that I could not be doing that. It was illegal. And in the city of Arlington, it was considered a firearm. Nothing about this made sense to me. But she said, I just want you to put it away and we won't worry about this. I don't want to argue. Okay, fine. I'm not going to go to court over this. So I put the gun away and tell her, yeah, I won't do this anymore. Except I'm going to tell you that I'm going to check on what you just told me and see if it's true or not. But if it is, fair enough. I didn't know. She leaves. 2 days later, she's back. I'm back there shooting my pellet gun. Can you put the gun away, sir? No. Why not? Because it's not a firearm. It does not place you in danger in any way. And you have no business on my property and you need to leave now. Well, I thought we did have this discussion. I called your boss at your police station and I verified that I'm right and you're wrong. If you'd like to call that in now, go ahead. But I'm not doing this. There's nothing I'm doing here that you can cite me for. It's not illegal. She goes like this. Goes back to her car. Comes back, knocks on the fence this time instead of opening it. Much smarter, so you don't get bit by the dog and shoot my dog. Dogs are inside because I know this might happen. She says, can I talk to you? No, put the gun away. No bullshit. Can I talk to you? I said, yeah, sure. Go over to talk to her. Set the gun against the porch. Go talk to her. I verified that you're correct. Great. But could you do me a favor and not do this so we stop getting calls? I'm sorry, absolutely not. But you understand why your neighbor feels this way. Sure. And you can understand why she might feel this way? Yeah. Do you understand that there could be a danger? No, there's no danger. We both know that. I hope you know that since you're a cop and you carry a gun, that you could see what I'm doing and there is no danger. Anyway, but you could see why there would be perceived danger. I said in the uneducated, yes. You could see why this would be inconvenience for us to keep getting phone calls about it. Absolutely. Well, what do you propose we do? I propose that you and your department tell this neighbor, whichever one of them are, and I'm pretty sure it's her, even though you won't tell me, that you tell them the next time they call that what's happening is not a violation of the law and to shut up and stop calling you. I suggest you go talk to her and explain that to her and tell her if she makes another false report, now that she's informed, you're going to cite her and you leave me alone and have a nice day. See, this is respectful but assertion of rights. And I can't tell you where you would do this, but you should assert your rights where they are. Community freedom, or what we would call tribe freedom, is building that community. You know, that starts for us. I'm going to tell you, the tightest people in this community are on a Telegram group. And it may not be one you can be part of. The next tightest group is the Telegram community everybody can be part of. And that's the Telegram group. But there's a group that is only for people who have been to a TSP workshop on property. And it will continue to grow based on that thing. And that's the tight group. That's the group supporting the shit out of each other. The other one's damn good, though, but it's another reason to come to a workshop. You get access to that private group. The Facebook forum, still pretty active, even though I don't do much on Facebook. All of the communities are. And that's just within TSPC. Then there's the satellite communities and other communities you can join, and that's just virtual. But when it comes to the people in your orbit, around you in real life, vet these people that you make part of your life. That's part of what's in the book, is about having friends that you spend real time with who you at least want to be like a little bit more in some way. Do not let people into that inner circle that you spend solid time with who make you worse. Only people who make you better. That doesn't mean people better than you at everything. It means better than you at something, and hopefully you're better than them at something, so you rise together. The rising tide floating all boats. That's part of it. Be involved with doers, people that get shit done and share your values. And as I said, that was always allowed. Nothing we're talking about today is something like you have to go get a law passed to do or get a law repealed to do. We've always been able to associate with the people we want to be with. On some level, create the parallel economies. Find ways to trade and interact with people who value freedom, exchange goods and services outside centralized systems. Joe Riles. By the way, still has some amazing dogs. One of you guys picked up one of his fully trained non-protection dogs. He still has a few available. I helped him get that dog sold. But when we were in Tennessee, one of the reasons he's doing some of the things he's doing a little bit different right now, he needs to raise some capital because they built a new home and there was a deal with the landowner that was going to bring electricity in, and now that's not happening. So he needs to get electricity in and he needs to get the house wired. Well, he made a deal and traded a puppy to an electrician for a week's worth of electrical work. You see how valuable that is right there? Now, if he sold the dog, he was going to do the same thing with the money. But now, and the guy that's a licensed electrician that got that dog, he was like at the end of that bar, like, I win. I won tonight. He was freaking stoked. He was freaking stoked. And now Joel is highly likely to not pay all the money to bring the electrical line in, because who? With the beard that used to be on the expert council? Sean Mills. Sean's like, you know, for what you need to do for power versus paying to bring that power line in, you could afford a really sturdy, beefed up solar array and all the shit you need, and you could always expand it later. So that is that actually happening in our community right now in real time. Joel knows me. I go on the air and say, he's got this dog. That raises some cash. Joel goes to the workshop, connects with the electrician, trades the puppy. All of a sudden, the problem that has to seem like, how am I going to do? They got a bunch of kids. They're stuck. They have this house built and almost done. They don't have power to it. They're living out of their freaking RV. And boom. Did somebody pass a law? Did he get lucky? Or did he leverage the power of community and tribal freedom to solve the problem? You can do that too. Trade skills and knowledge. That's what that was about. do you realize how much value you might have based on things you know how to do? If somebody wants it done, they don't have the cash, but they have something you want. In fact, the best barter isn't a thing for a thing, right? It's not, I have a Sharpie and you have a little stainless steel bowl and we're going to switch. That's fine. The most value most people have is what they know and know how to do and get done. And most of us have something like that. Ask yourself, what do I have to offer? You should make a one-pager. If you don't know what that is, ask ChatGPT. On all the things that you know how to do and are willing to offer and barter. Holy fuck, we need to do something with that. I didn't plan that today. We need that. Now, see, Harry, some of you guys know who Hog-Eye Harry is. He sort of does this on many at every TSP workshop, and God, I love him for it. He has people go take a picture of themselves, write this down. He sends out an email distribution list of all the people that came to the workshop, what they do, what they can do, what they're willing to help other people do, and what they want to learn, right? And then only if you do it do you get on the thing and you get the email with everybody. And then you have this picture in their thing, so you're like, oh, I remember him. I remember her. And so many things have happened. We need to upscale the fuck out of that. Tom, that is in your wheelhouse of many things to figure out how we systematize that. Imagine how fucking powerful that would be. A database of TSPC community members, what they can do, where they can do it, how they can do it, and what they need. Holy shit, how did we not see that until 2025, folks? We will figure out how to make that shit happen. We want to make trading skills and knowledge something that is done at a commodity level, right? A premium service at a commodity level, as in it can be found quickly and executed quickly. We are going to do that shit. You know, wrapping up today, the power of personal freedom. Freedom isn't something that can be granted. It has to be taken. And you can't look in history at any time and see that those in power willingly gave freedom up. Even when it looks like it was only an illusion, some undertow pulled freedom into existence. Some revolutionary action, some civil disobedience, some something somewhere did it and made it happen. And an undertow is a good way to understand where it looks like, you know, this benevolent dictator took over and said, I shall return the republic back to the people or some shit, right? No, it was always an undertow. And an undertow is a great way to understand it. So an undertow is like you look out and the sea looks calm and you see somebody go down and they're freaking drowning. And unless if they know what they're doing, at least they pop up somewhere far away because the water underneath is moving really fast and the surface is going the opposite direction or maybe really slow. And so you didn't see it, but it was there, and it's what actually caused the person to go under. Any time that true liberty has risen in the world, it's either been directly fucking seized or there was an undertow that you didn't see going on, and history has written out to make that person that was in charge when it happened look like they did it. Right? You think, we talk about cannabis legalization, all the cannabis legalization. Do you think when it was illegal, nobody like my buddy Petey grew it in a fucking closet? And everybody didn't do it, that it would have ever been, if everybody complied, would it have ever become legal? No. It is always the rebellious that move us forward. Some go from the inside and push, some go from the outside and pull, some work with government, some work in resistance to government, and some just fucking do it. And it all works together, but it's that undertow that moves us toward freedom. You need to take one small step in each of these areas and do it today. I know I said not everybody can do everything, but you can do one little fucking thing in everything, even if it's just making a plan or setting a goal. Something. Act on it. Fucking now. Do it now. I mean fucking now. I mean rate the fuck now. I mean, as I'm talking, if you're in the life, write some fucking shit down. You're going to do now. Do you understand what now means? N-O-fucking-W. Now. Right now. As I'm speaking. Do something. I'm going to wait a second. I'm going to take a drink. If you don't write something down right now, you're not fucking serious. Okay, if you didn't write anything down in that pause, fucking turn it off. You don't need the rest. You don't deserve it. Get the fuck out of my sight. Or go ahead and do it, and then you can keep listening. Freedom is an action. It's not a request. It's not a please may I. It's an I've already done. It is the concept is it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And I don't even like forgiveness. Because most of the things that we do that are in opposition to what we're supposed to do or told to do or told we can't do or whatever it is, they're not actually wrong. They're just obtrusive to the system that doesn't want you to do it, right? They're morally fine, but they're illegal or they're against code or they're against Karenism or whatever it is. So I prefer, so I don't ask for a fucking, I don't apologize unless I did something wrong. And if I do something wrong, I apologize fully. I own it, shoulders back, head up, eye to eye contact. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. It's my fault. I own it. If I didn't do something wrong, you're not getting that from me. So I would say it is easier to deal with the it is better to deal with the consequences of getting caught in a well thought out plan to circumvent authority than to ask for permission. So you have to build risk in. You shouldn't take risks that involve going to federal prison. When I wanted to do the first version of Perma Ethos, I had a guy from the FTC come to me and say, bro, if you do that, they're going to put you in federal prison. And he's like, I love what you're doing. I think you should be allowed to do it. I don't see anything wrong with it, but they will put you in federal prison. I'm not doing it. And I have people go, you should do it anyway. You're not the one going to Club Fed. Me. So when I'm saying this, I don't mean just do whatever you want. I mean, do whatever you want that makes sense from a pragmatic risk assessment standpoint. But no one will do it for you. And if they did, it won't be real. Somebody giving you access to freedom, you'll fuck it up. Just like the deadbeat guy who pissed away his money his whole life, had a decent income, but always lived like he was poor because he spent the money before he had it, wins the lottery. 5 years later, his life is worse. His life is, and I mean, sometimes big time lottery winners, $30, $40 million, where they could have said, you know what, I'm just going to take all the money, even after the government takes our share, I'm going to stick it in this thing over here, and I'm going to have a $500,000 a year check come to me. And when I die, the $500,000 check can go to my son or daughter's for, you know, another 100 years before it runs out. And they're still broke because they didn't even have the discipline to do that. Freedom works like money. Freedom and money are the same. They're just different manifestations of it. Freedom is, money is a means to freedom. It's economic energy. It's thermodynamics. And if you can't handle money, you can't handle freedom. Because money will result in freedom, and freedom for a person that can't handle it, I'm back to a child is born into captivity. If you're still a child when you're a man, if you're a man child, freedom will hurt you. You know, we've tried to build a society where stupid doesn't hurt. And stupid should hurt. That's it. We would have less stupid. But in the end, if you have enough freedom, you can use enough stupid that it will hurt. So reflect today at the end here. What freedoms have you given up? What things have you allowed to be eroded as freedoms in your lifetime? And if you're 50, there's a pretty long list. Things that you could have done in 1985 that you can't legally do now. Now, go back to the list and ask yourself, how many of those things do you think you could do in 1985 and you think you can't do now, but you could do now if you structured it right? That's what you've really let be taken. I don't blame anybody listening to me today at all for the laws that were passed. Bullshit. No way to blame anybody for that. And if we would have elected a different clown, they probably still would have happened most of the time. But the things that you could be doing that you've allowed yourself to be convinced you haven't, those are freedoms you voluntarily surrendered. You voluntarily, you do not have to do that shit. Make that list and start going, this is untenable. This is these are things I am no longer willing to live with the belief that I can't do these things. I will set up a way for me to be able to do them if they benefit me. Share your thoughts with others. Get involved on our social media platforms. Get involved with us on X. Telegram's the best because you have that group communication. Share what you're doing. Make declarations. I'm going to get these things done because it'll be amazing what happens. All of a sudden, you'll actually get them done. It's weird. It's weird what happens when you make declarations. It's not New Age bullshit. It's personal accountability to oneself when oneself is the responsible party. So if I say, I am going to do X, Y, and Z, my odds of doing X, Y, and Z just went up exponentially over just I'd like to do X, Y, and Z, even if nobody hears me. If I tell one person, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. My odds go up exponentially from just stating it to myself. If I tell it to a large group, and it's a group of people who want to do things themselves and want to see me succeed, it's another exponential leap. If you declare things and you are reasonable in your declarations and you are insistent in your efforts that go with those declarations, it becomes almost impossible not to achieve them. It's simple. It ain't fucking easy, boys and girls. It ain't easy. I never once said any of the shit we talk about was easy, because if it was easy, everybody would do it. Water flowing to a valley and going down to a river is easy. Moving water out of the valley to the ridges with a swale-based system and a key line design is simple. It ain't easy, but it is simple. It can be done. Other people have done it. You follow a process and it happens. If you take that process of stating intention, and I don't mean writing it down on a piece of paper every day and reading it and looking in the mirror and go, I'm wonderful, I'm great, and if people like me. I don't mean that. I mean being serious about it, setting goals, and applying systems to getting them done, and then looking at failures as corrections instead of failures, to understand cheating is only cheating if it advances your goal and all other things are failures. You do that, you will have success. Will you get everything you want? Absolutely fucking not. You will never get everything you want. But you can get most of it. You can get most of it. And that is a million times better than the average person will ever do. That's all I got for you guys today. As we wrap up, I don't have an item of the day because today is F-35 Straight Jack's House Day again. It's also book day. And I really, again, encourage you, if you have not yet picked up a copy of Laws of Life today, please consider doing so. If you have somebody, this is another way to use this book. And it's what a lot of people, I'm telling, like, okay, here's a bonus marketing lesson today. I don't care what you think your thing does, your product, your service, your whatever. Like, I'm going to talk about this in a Bitcoin episode in the future. What Satoshi wanted doesn't fucking matter. Whatever you design, whatever you develop, whatever you set out into the wild, whatever you think it should do is not as important as what the market decides it does. I talk about Volvo when I do this in a business lesson. Volvo thought their car was cool. And I'm talking like 70s Volvos, square Volvos. I don't know why they thought they were cool, but they did. They were marketing their car as a high-performance, cool car. The market decided, hey, look, almost everything that gets in a crash in a Volvo lives. And they sell those in Germany where there's no speed limit, and still almost everybody lives. Volvo means safety. And Volvo said, no, we don't. We're cool, and we're fast, and we're high-performance. And the market said, no, you're safety. And eventually, the people at Volvo said, you know what? We're a really safe car to drive. So people were buying Volvos for their teenagers. Rich people were anyway. Instead of like Mercedes, because they were fast, not really cool, but they were safe. So that got defined. So this is the way this got defined to me, my book. Jack, I'm buying your book for several people I know because they won't sit down and listen to a podcast, but I want them to hear this and maybe they'll read a book. So that might be another reason to pick up more than one copy. Again, if you are buying the book on Amazon, I don't know why. When you go to buy it, it says like there's only one available from the seller or something like that, which is nonsense because it's KDP, it's print on demand. And once you add it to your cart, then you can change the quantity. If somebody knows anything I can do to make that go away, let me know. But that's what everybody's telling me, and I don't get it. I will tell you this, though. I ordered author proof copies after I got to the done point, and it said I could only order 5. And so I did. And it let me change it in the cart. I was like, can I change it? Oh, look, I can. So it's not unique to only one thing, but hey, check it out. Also check out jackslaws.com, jacklaws.com. And I think you'll find a lot of really good stuff there. But again, it's the ChatGPT course that we're going to do. Guys, I don't know, man. Building this course woke something up in me. And if you heard some urgency in me today that you haven't heard in a while and some excitement that you haven't heard in a while as part of it, as I was building this, I was realizing that what I hate about business and scaling it with people, that I could process business to the point where I could scale a business again, even now if I choose to. This will let you scale your business, whether you're one person or one person in a small team or a big business. And if you want to get into the class, I'm going to tell you again, I'm not just marketing here. I'm not just making shit up. I'm not creating false urgency. I have never put anything out as minimal as I put this out on the air. I think I talked about it before today twice. When I went to Nicole Sauces, every second person, when is that going to be? When is that going to be? I've gotten dozens and dozens of emails in the last week alone. Like, when can I sign up? Can I get on a wait? If you can get a waiting list now, I'll put a link in the show notes directly to the subpage. But if you go to Laws of Life, jackslaws.com, and you look up at the top of the screen right now, this second, you'll see the thing. And I have a feeling that when we're ready to go live for sale, I'm going to send one email and it's going to fill. That's my instinct. That doesn't always happen when I think it's going to, but it usually does. And I've not seen anything like this. And it is, you know, again, not just urgency, right? Not just trying to sell a lot. It's going to go up in price. Right now I look at it and go, this is a $300 course with no apologies. And I'll try to keep it under that eventually, but first round's $100. $100 for 40 days of my personal guidance and the support of a group of 100 people. Using a cutting edge tool in a cutting edge way. And I don't think anybody's even done this. And I'll be full disclosure here. I took Josh Hale's course for $50 for a 1 month course. It's like 20 days because it's Monday through Friday. I didn't get a lot out of it. Maybe if I had never used ChatGPT in my life, I would have. But I was like, this is crap. This is not what I was told I was getting. And I'm not picking on Josh because he does some great things. And I learned some great things from Josh. But that, I was like, this isn't how this should be. And I did what I always do. Well, don't go talking shit about somebody else's. If you think it can be done better, either do it or shut up. Sometimes I shut up. Sometimes I do it. My first pass through was a tenfold improvement, in my opinion, and it was shit. And my next pass through was a tenfold improvement on where I started, and it was shit. And I kept going until I said, no, this I'm proud to put my name on. And we're going to be running this. Hogs says, can we gift the course? You can gift it, but you have to do it the same. You have to buy it and give the person the freaking information. I mean, that's how you would do it. I don't have like a gift certificate thing. But in addition to me being there as the marketing guy, Tom's going to be in on this as like the tech side of this. And there's some other things that we're talking about back end between us that we're going to try to do to help people roll out things even faster. So get in on it if you want to. With that, I'm going to wrap up today. Thank you for tuning in. I really, really appreciate it. Again, if you go over to jackslaws.com, there's an opt-in to get the workbook to go along with the book that you can buy now. That is not for the course. Up at the top, there's a little blurb about the course. Again, I'll put links to that stuff in the show notes today. Take care, guys. Oh, wait, shit, we got questions. I don't not do questions if I have time. John Dalton Hendricks says, is there a different link for ambassadors? Do we just buy from one link? We already covered that. One link for everybody. It's just buying it on Amazon. Jacob, I built a small landscaping side hustle to bring in more income. It is amazing that I'm able to buy equipment that's owned by the LLC that I can also use at home whenever I want. Jack, you're a jerk. That's true. The LLC owns the tool. It's either a direct expense with accelerated depreciation or normal depreciation. There's no law that says your company can't loan the tool out to others. So, yes, that is the way to thread the tax needle there and stay legal. Meanwhile, in Wyoming says, Jack is a jerk. Walked to freedom from Illinois 9 years ago. Now I have a dream job. Walked to freedom from Illinois, not to Illinois. From Illinois 9 years ago. Now I have a dream job working towards early retirement on my 35 acres of paradise. Thanks, jerk. Thank you. That is the fucking payday, guys. If you ever want to build something like TSP, that's the fucking payday. That's the best. That's the best you'll ever get. And things like that. Vincent says, will you have an audiobook available for your new book? We'll see. the amount of work necessary to do what we did, putting that book out, was way more than I thought it would be when I started. I don't even know the pathway to like getting on Audible or anything. I know that everyone's like, Jack, you're the podcast guy. Just read your book and make it up. No, you don't want that. I'm not a narrator. Like, one of the real keys to getting really good at what you do and being really successful is understand what you're good at, what you can be good at, what you're great at, what you can be great at, what you're not good at and you'll never be good at, what you could be good at, but you shouldn't be good at it because it'll take time, that you'd be better off doing the things you're already good at or great at that are more productive, and understanding that division. I am not a good narrator. I probably could, you know, basically work at it for, you know, a couple months and become good at reading things from a piece of paper, but it's never how I've presented. I've never really relied on reading. Every once in a while, a presentation, I'm doing a quote, I want to get it right, I'll turn around and read just that one, and I go right back to it. So if I do this, there's only two ways it would happen. One, I'd have to find a good narrator, and that's an expense, right? And some sort of royalty, usually those guys want, which is fair. But then I have to be able to make the money back, or it's not worth doing from a business standpoint. Or I need to do something like use an AI-trained tool in my voice to do the narration for me, and I don't even know how that affects rules on Amazon right now. So I would like to do it, right? But comment day after day says, could ChatGPT create read the audiobook in the course? I doubt it. I don't think ChatGPT is the tool for that type of long-form content. But there are tools that'll do it. And, you know, maybe it's something we'll look into. But right now it's what it is. And it's what I wanted was a book people could hand to other people. So that was the goal. So it's just probably not what we're going to do right now. Anyone golf says get Nicole or John to do it. I don't think either one of them would really want to. I guess John Willis doing it, but angry John Willis. That would be, you know, you need to get your ass to work. Anyway, guys, I need to go. Thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for supporting me all these years. And tune in tomorrow. We'll be doing something else, a little bit different, maybe more homesteady type stuff tomorrow. Take care, guys. Catch you then. Bail you out, just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month. You never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you. Revolution.